Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. I am in Cleveland. Ryan Finley, who is the sports editor of the Union Tribune, in San Diego. Padres, Guardians. Guardians have the best record in the American League. Padres are a game out of the playoffs. The second half begins tomorrow as we tape this on Thursday. Ryan, where would you like to start?
Where have you been? It feels like it's been forever since we've done one of these. I think it's been like less than a week. But I'm used to talking to you here every 3.5 days, it seems like, during the season. How was Dallas or Arlington? I'm sorry. Tell me about the All-Star game.
You know, I think that the guys enjoyed it. It's always hard to tell with Robert Suarez whether he enjoys it or is in immense pain or anything. And I think that's the beauty about Robert Suarez is he just goes and does his job. I just know that Jurickson and Profar relished every moment of it. He and his son, Jackson Merrill, who generally is just like all about winning and tries to downplay stuff. I think he really enjoyed it very much. And, you know, they both got a hit. Jackson's was a line drive in the book. And you know what? The truth was he lined a ball the other way on his first at bat and a guy made a sliding catch. Maybe he deserved that one. Good for him. He's now 1-for-2 in the All-Star game. Both of them afterward talked about how now it's time to look toward the second half, though they both did say they're going to work really hard to get back there because they, you know, that's how much they enjoyed it.
Yeah, one of my favorite things that you've written for us in a while is a story that ran Tuesday ahead of the All-Star game. It's a feature about Jackson Merrill. And, you know, I think sometimes we watch him every day. You have seen him daily since like February. I think sometimes we need to remind ourselves of just where this guy was. And a year ago, this guy was in the Futures game, but had just made that move, right, from single A to double A.
He wasn't, well, just now, but see, the All-Star game was a week earlier. Right. So there's a little break, and 6 days after, I believe, he appeared in the Futures game, technically as a member of the low A Fort Wayne Tin Caps, he was promoted to double A.
Right. He was in single A a year ago. When he was in high school, which would have been 3 years ago, he was a commit to LSU, USC, the University of Arizona. No, Army.
Well, Kentucky. He had decommitted from Army and to Kentucky late, but yes. Right.
And this is not somebody who, you know, he didn't do the travel ball circuit. His parents were high school teachers or are high school teachers. He's as unlikely, I think, an origin story as we'll see in America, at least. Talk about him and how he's gotten this far.
Yeah, you know what? That is true. It's like one thing I was talking with people about is like there's no secrets anymore. And Jackson Merrill was as close to a secret as you could get in modern society and modern sports scouting, the draft, a 27th overall pick who, like, no one that wasn't paying attention and a lot of people who were paying attention didn't really have on their radar, certainly that high. And now here he is 3 years later and he's in the All-Star game, not just like in the major leagues, which would be on its own almost a mind-boggling progression for a high school kid.
Sure.
But one who was young, by the way, had just turned 18 when he graduated and was drafted, but an all-star and a guy who you could at various points in the season, in particular during their 12-3 run there in June into early July, was about as good a player as they had on their team.
Yeah, absolutely. And somebody who I just think every once in a while it's worth sort of taking a deep breath and looking back at this, what he's been able to do this year, just being a serviceable major league player, much less a good one. Yeah. It has been pretty impressive for all the questions we had. And maybe this is a nice way to spin it to the second quote unquote half of the season. All the questions we had in February, right? Who's going to play left field? What's Jackson Merrill going to be like? Who's going to pitch every fifth? It seems like a lot of them have been answered and answered in a semi-positive way. But as we reach, you know, the unofficial start of the second half of the season, this is a team that is one game above 500 and not in playoff. Is this a playoff team?
Yeah, it's really hard to reconcile. I mean, I've been struggling all day with this second half story I'm doing. And it focuses on Mike Schilt and the players' right. belief in him and how that they believe and that there is merit to the idea that they're improving and that will manifest itself in them becoming a playoff team. But they lost 6 of 7 going into the break. Like, it's really hard to reconcile. And you nailed it. So many of the question marks are no longer question marks. Jurickson Profar, Jackson Merrill, how will Jake Cronenworth do? Matt Waldron, you know, that fifth spot in the lineup or in the rotation. how Michael King in his first year as a full-time starter. These are all positive. I mean, look, Luis Camposano really fell off, but Kyle Higashioka picked up the slack. So their catcher is, you know, catcher, look, don't expect too much out of it. That's one of the most productive catcher tandems in the league. You know, so, but I think we know why, and we've talked about it, if not every podcast close to it. There's injuries to key guys, even guys who were playing or injured, and the production of the key guys hasn't been what it needs to be. And all along, like, this is a better team. Like, I'm doing, if you're not watching it live, it's a team. I'm doing a circle with my hands to illustrate all encompassing, deeper, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. The team was built around Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., Xander Bogaerts.
Right. You could also argue that this is a team that has survived, at least so far, injuries to Xander Bogaerts, who's just now back. Manny Machado, who wasn't quite himself for the first month and a half of the season. Fernando Tatis Jr., who's out indefinitely. Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish, who was hurt, now he's on the restricted list. They've endured a lot to be a game over 500, but man, a lot of things have gone right for them too. And like, if you are what the back of your baseball card says you are, I just don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're the best bad team in baseball or the worst good team in baseball. You know what I mean?
I do. It's like Cleveland. I don't know if it's the best worst city in America or the worst best city. No, I love Cleveland, but my point is, you have to look for it, and you have to look for it with the Padres. You have to look for the positives, and look. I think I left out, because we didn't know that he would be a Padre. Like, I've left out like the Donovan Solano, right? Yep. Has been one of the guys to make them better. Heck, lately David Peralta. Luis Arraez wasn't here, but Dylan Cease hasn't been what he should be. Like, you can go around and around. You are correct. And I certainly know that the Padres would say that, while they're also careful to always say every team deals with injuries. They feel like they have endured, that they have gotten better in a lot of things, base running, situational hitting, things that are important, and that's awesome. And we may end up looking here at the end of the season when this season's done, and they're done on the 29th of September, I think, is the final regular season game, and say, yeah, you know what? They got better in a lot of ways. Their record wasn't as good, or they're not a playoff team. Or Manny will hit, Xander will hit, Tatis will come back and hit. By the way, Tatis, MRI this week, positive, very positive, that in terms of, not like, oh, his return is sooner than they think, which is probably mid to late August, but in terms of, this is what we expected, and he can continue to kind of progress in doing baseball activities. So that's a positive. But they need him to come back and kind of hit the ground running, right? Mm-hmm. So like, it still is about those guys, but you're right on like your points about hard to reconcile why they are a game over, except for it's very easy to. And then it's impressive to some extent that they are a game over.
What was their record at the deadline or at the All-Star break last year? Do you remember?
They were a losing team.
Okay.
But
I mean, right. Yeah. I think along those lines, it's funny to me. And again, Kevin, I have no insight, probably not a good thing to say on a podcast, but I have no insight. I watch on TV. I pay attention. I leave the journalism to you when it comes to the Padres. But I have a hard time reconciling how much easier this team is to watch. I find that they play hard. I find that the mental errors and the mistakes that I think really have dogged some Padre teams since, I've been about 3 months old. I think they play good baseball. I think they play smart baseball. The fact that they're playing good and smart baseball, getting performance from all these guys, and are, let's be kind here, a handful of games better than they were at this point last year. I have a hard time. Make it make sense, Kevin.
We've talked about it. I don't think there's any more you can do. I really don't. Because you are right about everything that you said. And I know that like, they believe that that is true. Even when they take a hard look at themselves, they believe that they play harder, they play smarter. And all these things that Mike Schilt calls winning on the margins, that they fairly consistently do that. You look, there are times they just got into it where they had some games where they got into the old habits with the at-bats. They were facing good pitchers. Their pitchers were kind of putting them in a hole. Their own pitchers were putting them in a hole, and they were trying to fight back, getting a 3-run homer with no one on base. Okay, sure. Then they fixed it. Okay. in the second to the last game. I do think to some extent that they lost 6-7 at the end because they did face some of the best pitchers that they've seen this season. And that happens. All right. But I have a hard time saying that because like it can't keep happening.
Right.
But I think we explained it. Injuries and Manny Machado not performing until I want to make sure I get this right. I want to give him his credit. Past 22 games, a 982 OPS. So there was a time, however, and this was the time when that, you know, record of two games under, three games over, three games under, one game under, it seemed like every time you turned around, basically they were just a 500 team. And Manny was a middling player at best. Worst start of his career through a certain number of games. Xander Bogaerts just came back, got two hits in each of his first two games back. They need him to continue that. Tatis has been out since, what, the 21st of June. There's a lot of ways. Now, they won, by the way, for the first 2 weeks of his being out. Right. But there's a lot of ways to explain why they're only this good. However, I was saying it in the beginning because injuries do happen. And then here's the Dodgers who have lost 6-7, right? Mm-hmm. Here's the Guardians who are injury riddled. The Guardians who have, as I said, they're 58-37, best record in the American League. They lost 5-7 going into the break.
Wow.
Teams go through it, man. I just did for this story I'm doing. I did all the research on World Series teams, playoff teams. I've done it before, but I wanted to make sure I had it. Teams go through it, all right? Every team. Virtually every team, not the Dodgers in their asterisk World Series. I think they never lost more than two in a row. Not a couple of those Yankees teams back in the 90s. One of the Astros teams, like their longest losing streak was like three games. It's very rare, though. Teams go through it. But what the thing is, the good teams also built it up with an eight-game winning streak, winning 14 of 15, that sort of thing. The Padres had their nice 12-3 run, got to six over. Mm-hmm. And then lost five in a row.
Right, right. This is, you got to squirrel away your nuts so that when winter comes, you can eat, right? Padres are winter hit last week with the Padres. And we had a column in today's paper. Bryce Miller wrote that in his mind, two guys who are going to be key to this whole thing the rest of the way are Manny Machado and Dylan Cease. I'm going to ask you the same question. Who are, if they are to make the playoffs and make a push in the playoffs, who's going to have to step up here in the final 2 months?
Well, that's good. Bryce has been reading me. I just feel like I've said, like absolutely. That's Bryce's job to say that. And I mean, it's the truth and he said it and there you go. Now he could have made the argument. I can make the argument that it needs to be Xander Bogaerts. But the reality is those are the two guys it starts with. If you're going to go, you're going to pick one on offense or you're going to pick one pitching, like Dylan Cease cannot be the guy who had the 6-something ERA over 10 starts. Cannot be that guy. That's not what they gave up those prospects for. That's not what they counted on. Forget what they gave up. It's what they thought they got. That's why they went after Dylan Cease is – this guy has the capability to be the guy when his first eight starts had a whatever it was, 216, 219, whatever. And in his last start had a start against the Nationals. I think there was a start against – there was another start I'm forgetting. And then there was that start against the Cubs on May 8th where all four times he gave up one hit. Three of those times I think went seven innings. Another time went six. One hit, no runs. Not just like that, as if that's not impressive enough. You are watching the game going, no one is going to hit this guy ever. And I think in at least two of them, it was an infield dribbler was the only hit he gave up. And it was two of them and the other two were line drives. But like my point in all that babbling, this guy is incredible. And then he's not. Right. The not version is not like – they need more than that. They need Joe Musgrove to come back. I write today that for all this, whatever I do about Mike Schilt and players and all this, you know what? They probably – it's one of the deciding factors is going to be what they do at the trade deadline. This bullpen is leaky, man. They need something. They need help there. They've been going through this with 3.5 to 4 starters, all right? Yeah. They need another starter. But the fact is, if Dylan Cease is not who he's supposed to be – man, I'm too smart to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Zero chance.
Right. Dylan Cease, keep in mind, leads the National League in strikeouts. He is one off the major, or being tied, he's one behind Garrett Crochet, who people can't stop talking about, right, for the major league lead in strikeouts. And yet he's 8-8 with an ERA of just under 4. So his strikeouts say he is elite with a capital E. His win-loss record, which I know isn't always the end-all be-all, his win-loss record and his ERA say he's just a guy.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's actually kind of crazy. It's like a more cerebral, I'm not saying that Blake Snell is not cerebral, but a more overtly cerebral, less wacky, different hobbies, right? Blake Snell and Dylan Cease are very similar.
Cat guy, likes honey, makes his own honey.
Likes making honey, philosophers, just talks about stuff in a way that he's thinking about it very deeply.
God, that's a reporter's dream, Kevin.
It is, but he also stops himself. I don't ever blame guys for this. I think he's an introvert, and he's one of these guys who he's in the middle of a really good answer, and then it's like, yeah. Dylan, you were going to say something.
No. Right.
Don't stop.
That's funny. Hey, Cleveland Guardians, this is a team, man, for 25 years, they've had the secret sauce. I don't know that they're particularly memorable year to year. This is a team that seems to do kind of what Milwaukee does, is they make the tournament, but they don't do a ton. Yet this year, they're running away with it. A team that before this skid was even more impressive in the American. What makes them go? What should we be on the lookout for here?
You know, it's really interesting. Like, they have the best bullpen in baseball by some metrics, including ERA, which we don't look at relievers ERA until we put it together collectively over the course of a season. And that tells you a story that their bullpen is effective. Their starting pitching is one of the worst in the major leagues, the rotation. Now, here's the thing about when you're starting the second half after a 4-day break. You don't face the guys who have dragged down the rotation's ERA.
Right.
You face face Tanner Bibby and is it Gavin Williams, I think, and Ben Lively. We'll go over them. We'll talk about them later. And, of course, the Guardians get to face Matt Waldron, Dylan Cease, and Michael King. They face the Padres best. But the rotation has not been good. Their offense is, like, middling, really. I mean, like, middle of the American League in runs scored, OPS, maybe a little better than middle. But, like, they have two guys. Let's see. Jose Ramirez, I believe, has 23 home runs. Josh Naylor has 22. So they're like this. They have like five guys with an 800 plus OPS. But it's not. But then they have a bunch of guys that just aren't very good. Like, but they're this middling offense that's very dangerous. And I think that's what is carrying them. They obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, I did not check, but they obviously are like getting it done when they have to, right? Like, I don't know what their situational hitting is like, but they're getting it done when they have to, and their big guys are doing it. They had five all-stars. That was Emmanuel Clase and four position players.
Right. Stephen Kwan, somebody having a great year too. Yeah. Somebody reminds me a little bit of a rise, only in that the stuff he's good at reminds you of what we were doing 20 years ago. I mean, there's some Kenny Lofton in Stephen Kwan's game, and I find him very fun to watch.
And Kwan is also a guy who you saw and you're like, wow, that's like a really talented guy. You know, what's he going to do? And I think this year has added more. I mean, he's added some slug. It's not like overbearing, but I think he leads them in OPS. And I believe there were some swing changes that people are actually sort of surprised the average is as high as it is because he has added some loft. I'm trying to not say he was all about a launch angle because I don't think he was, but like he did make some changes to get some more slug and here he is.
They're just really, I find them as a franchise to be fascinating.
They were that team, I bet you, as your formative years as a Padre fan, you were wondering why the Padres couldn't do that.
The Padres tried and failed miserably. I mean, remember when they were like, we're going to do what Cleveland did. Corey Lupke, here's a bunch of money, right? Hey, we're going to buy out. I mean, they went through that stretch, and I think it was Sandy Alderson on or around there, where they were doing the Cleveland strategy of buying out guys' arbiters, having some cost certainty going forward, even if you were overpaying a little bit. And it seemed like kind of across the board, it didn't work. You know, Jed Jerko didn't work. You know?
If this scouting department had been given that task, perhaps this, it really took, they were getting the right guys too.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And right, and they turned into guys, just not when they were Padres.
And they also made some coy free agent acquisitions. And yeah, they have. What was that? Mid-90s. They moved into what is now Progressive Field, what used to be Jacobs. So looking forward to seeing that. By the way, I think it's like a $300 million or something renovation.
Wow. Wow.
Maybe, might have even been more, but maybe they only did half of it this offseason. But because that was a ballpark that, quite honestly, it was one of the jewels and it hadn't changed for a long time. And
a little bit like Baltimore. Yeah, yeah, living on
its reputation.
Yeah, anymore. Right. So, yeah, living on what everybody said about it 20 years ago. So, yeah, it's a three-game series here starting Friday. Friday night's game on Apple TV, by the way. So I need to text my dad right now, because otherwise I'm going to get a text tomorrow being like, where's the game? 4:10 p.m. Friday. Let's talk here about, you know, it's Waldron versus Tanner Bibby. I'm
sorry. Yes.
In game one. Gosh, I mean, Bibby's good. 7-4, 3.77 ERA. You know, Matt Waldron has been their ace, but he is just, you know, 8-8 with a 3.7 ERA at this point. Little bit better than average.
I gotta say this about his last start.
Yeah, yeah.
7 innings. Was it 4 runs?
Yes.
All in one inning, but it wasn't a bad inning. It was 2 terrible, terrible pitches. Crushed. And another 6 and whatever innings of brilliance. Mm-hmm. Like, it was incredible. Like, like one of the better four run. Understand what I'm saying. Guy lost and he gave up 4 runs and he made terrible pitches. But he was so good that I think that he has seemed to learn very quickly and very well. And I think that was a positive sign for Matt Waldron.
Absolutely. And I also think that with him especially, you know, we don't watch knuckleballers, right? We just don't. We haven't. One thing about the knuckleball, when it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, it gets hit very
far. Right. And those were sweepers, but it speaks to your point of his other stuff then has to work as well, right? Like the other stuff has to work. He has to feel good about the knuckleball. If it's not working, he has to go the other stuff. He has to go the other stuff anyway. But yes, like his arsenal is just so complicated. Yes.
Yeah, it's very complicated. And then Saturday, Dylan Cease versus Gavin Williams. Gavin Williams, by the way, big, strong guy, like 6'6", 250. Only what, 0-1 this year, but the 3.7 ERA.
He's making his third start, had some elbow issues. He made his debut last year. He and Bibby are supposed, you know, they're the guys you think of when you think of like how the churn, the like the part, the years that Ruben Niebla was a part of their system where they just kept every year turning out 1, 2, 3 young guys. These are their most recent great hopes. Tanner Bibby and Gavin Williams. It is Gavin, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't write it down and I'm like, it's Gavin Williams. And for some reason I have in my head that it's not. But anyway, I will go forth confidently now knowing that it's Gavin Williams. That this kid is supposed to be, I'm not sure if he's been there. He was their number one prospect, but this is like one of their guys for the future.
Right. The Ben Lively versus Michael King on Sunday, both ERAs in the mid threes, very different pitchers, but both pretty effective this year. The only interesting thing I know about Ben Lively is that his nickname is Bebo. Like Tatis.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Weird.
That's one of Fernando Tatis's nicknames.
Yes. One of his many, many nicknames.
Yes. One of his probably lesser used, but except for by Bernie Wilson of the AP, who I think his favorite word. That's interesting. I had no idea. I'll look into that. Lively has been slightly better lately, but like you said, like a mid threes ERA. Michael King, he'll be a guy, and we'll probably talk about this virtually every start is, okay, how's he look? Because he is now basically the equivalent of one start worth of innings past his previous season high. He's already made as many starts. He's already made twice as many real starts, as in there wasn't a pitch limit, as he had made in his career before this season.
Right. I know that we're up
19 starts that he had made coming into this season, like 9 were real starts. What is he at? 20 starts now, 19, 111 innings. His previous high was 104 and 2/3. He has shown zero sign of slowing down. Zero.
Right. Right, right. Big, strong guy. Throwing, I mean, his velocity has been the same, if not a little bit better, right?
Yep.
Which is impressive. We've only got a couple more minutes here, but I feel like we need to talk about the elephant in the room, which is this is a team that has major need leading up to the trade deadline, which is like now. Week and a half away, Kevin?
Well, yeah, it's July 30th. So as we tape this, it's the 18th. And the reality is that the way that MLB has structured it now, with all front offices just having to concentrate on the draft, and the way that the season is structured, where there's so many contenders now because there's more playoff spots, that has incentivized teams. So you can look at it and say there's more mediocrity or that there's more contenders. Okay, whatever. And so you just don't have clear buyers and sellers until the very end. And this is where it will get a little crazy here in the next 10 days.
They have a wish list, I'm sure. Put them in order for me.
My answer is starting pitcher, relief pitcher. I'm told their answer is relief pitcher, starting pitcher. Whatever, flip a coin. They need both. They do not get through this season. And maybe this is speaking as a guy, but I've talked to their players. I've talked to people in the organization. I don't think they would disagree with me, but they don't get through this season without bolstering both of those.
Right. Do they need a right fielder?
Like I said, Fernando Tatis Jr. is trending toward coming back. The belief inside the organization. I'm not saying they're not going to add a bat. I don't know where they would get the money to do that if they're adding it pitchers, both pitcher types of pitchers. The belief in the organization is, look, Xander Bogaerts, Manny Machado, Luis Arraez, Fernando Tatis Jr., Jake Cronenworth. These guys have been paid. These guys are here. At some point, we're not going to be good if they're not good. Right. So, like, kind of like made your bet, right? Like, I mean, just come on now.
Right. Adding Dalton Varsho probably wouldn't be the difference between going to the playoffs and not, would be my guess.
It would be hard for me as I've sat here and thought about it. How much do I really take seriously the idea of them taking a position player? You couldn't argue against it, right? Like, they have holes in their lineup. It's difficult to see them going on with the lineup they have. Look, they're going to try to tread water, if you want to be honest about it, till Fernando gets back, right?
Right, right.
I mean, they believe they can do better, but they'll be happy if they're still in it when Fernando comes back. Sometimes it's hard for me to believe they will be in it by the time he comes back because of the lineup they have. Like, right. It's amazing that I would have expected more weeks like last week when you face good pitching. So, yeah, they could use some help, but there's only so many resources, and they already have so many good and well-paid players. It's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Great. Last thing, Kevin, I always put you on the spot, and this one's going to be a real put you on the spot question. So brace yourself. Jose Ramirez could be the best under the radar superstar in baseball. You look at his numbers. He's incredible. There was a not small chance he was going to get traded to the Padres. How close were they?
They thought they had him. They thought they had him. Jose Ramirez decided that he wanted to stay here, and I respect the hell out of it because he likes it here. His wife likes it here. He doesn't have to be here in the winter. And I remember the quote that he said when he took far less than he could have got in free agency, that how much money do you need? And look, he got $180 million, I think, from the Guardians. But they thought they had him. Like, he's one of the guys who I was talking to someone in the organization. I wrote a story the day of the All-Star game about how they had 5 All-Stars, counting Tatis, who was at home. 10 players who used to be in the Padres organization were at that game. And I talked to someone shortly after the game that night that estimated as many as 9 players were All-Stars this year, additional. So on top of the 15, 9 players were All-Stars this year that the Padres could be legitimately have said to be close to getting, like almost had them, including the game's MVP. I mean, and I wouldn't say they almost had Jarren Duran. Right. They love Jarren Duran and were trying to get him.
They were linked to him a lot in the offseason.
Right. So, but like legit made offers for, legit thought they could get him. And I mean, like, it's the easiest thing in the world to say, and you'll hear it a lot, you know, you're in on. But like some of the names I'd heard and some of the names I hadn't. like, or that I didn't realize they were that close on. And I won't share them here. This was a conversation that was not for me to do anything with, like in terms of, oh, they were after this guy, this guy, this guy. But I mentioned two guys that everyone knew about. You mentioned one. But yeah, there are stories about that that are like heartbreaking if you are a Padres fan or a Padres a member of the organization, because Jose Ramirez is just a fantastic player. You're correct in terms of how he doesn't, because he's in Cleveland. It's like the San Diego of the Midwest. Sure. Well, that's weird. Everywhere in the Midwest is the San Diego of the Midwest. In terms of, you know, we think in San Diego we don't get any we don't get any recognition for players. Try being in Cleveland and playing for the Guardians at a time when Shohei Ohtani is around. But you are correct; he's underrated. There's not a single baseball person that would not have, man, if it's not Shohei, perhaps Mookie Betts. But if you were going to start with one player on your team right now, you might start with Jose Ramirez after one of those two guys, and maybe before Mookie.
Right. On our next episode, I'll ask you what signings and deals they made because they couldn't get Jose Ramirez. And then we'll all do the math and go, oh, that cost them X hundreds of millions of dollars. But we've gone too long already. Padres, Guardians, 3-game series starting Friday at Progressive Field. Kevin, enjoy the Midwest. Say hello to Austin Hedges.
I will for sure.
Guardian, once again, 3-game series, Padres, Guardians. And then join us next time, Kevin. We'll talk about Padres and the Nationals squaring off in Washington, D.C., starting here on Tuesday. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.